The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra.
Today on Football Weekly Extra. Countdown to Champions League final. Inter and Bayern Munich face off, as do Bandini and Honigstein in our big game preview. Meantime, David Villa is off to Barcelona and maybe Fabregas is too. We ask, is this the dawn of the best club side ever? As new figures show, Spanish League couldn't be more bankrupt if it was managed by Harry Redknapp. Where is the money coming from? And will Arsenal make like a pro cyclist and get some fresh blood in? There's England's official World Cup suit, more on Mourinho's Real Madrid move. And speaking of morons, Maradona's enigmatic World Cup call-up. Plus, after Diego drives over a journalist's leg on his way to the press conference, we ask, if Diego can't avoid defeat, what chance do his team have? All of that, plus your post and our preview of the match that makes the Champions League look like small change, the £90 million playoff final, in today's Football Weekly Extra. Joining us here today on Football Weekly Extra, etc. We have Barry Glendening.
Hello.
Ooh, Paolo Bandini. Ciao.
Ciao.
Ciao. Ciao. And Raphael Honigstein, who's just about to depart for the Bernabeu for the big final.
Yes.
And we'll be talking more about that later on.
After a Serie A review.
No. I think today, what with some of the bombshells that Barca have been dropping on us, that we should start off with this whole Barcelona business. We'll call up Sid in a second. Paolo Bandini, though, among your many qualities, you are an Arsenal fan. And what about this? David Villa, who's obviously nothing to do with you, he's gone from Valencia to Barcelona, but it looks extremely likely now that Cesc Fabregas will be rejoining his former side, Barcelona. What does this mean for the Gunners? End of an era, etc. Discuss.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you can see, and he's just had probably, even though he was injured for a lot of it, another incredible season for Arsenal in terms of the goals he scored and the assists he made in the few games he actually, well, not a few games, but in the games he played relatively, few compared to how he's played in the last few seasons. And obviously, I'm absolutely gutted about it, and I think that every Arsenal fan is absolutely gutted about it. And I was sort of sitting there earlier, and there was obviously Barcelona. The initial report said Barcelona got off 30 million, which is a scandalously low fee. Given
half of Ibrahimovic,
exactly. Mm-hmm. Given what's paid for, I would say worse players who certainly aren't 23 years old and coming into the best years of their career. But the thing is that I sort of sat there and thought about it a little bit more, and I was thinking, well, it really doesn't matter what amount of money they put on him. Ultimately, I'm going to feel pretty bad about it, whatever happens.
Also, because there's no guarantee Wenger will actually spend the money, as he probably hasn't with Adebayor and Colatore's fees. Is that
no,
right?
No, and obviously that has been the knock on Wenger for so long. But I do think now, and obviously they knocked another 100 million off the debt, didn't they, last year, and I think that I'll be very surprised if he doesn't spend something significant this summer. Although the question is where exactly he spends it. Because obviously you look at it and you think, well, maybe Nasri's going to be the guy who drops back and plays in central midfield with him. Obviously Shamak looks like he's coming in. Then you think, are they going to have to change the system up front?
Indeed. I'm just wondering whether they are the next big four club to fall out of the top four, a la Liverpool. Rafa, you've probably got a less dramatic, less melodramatic question to put.
Is this the end of the era that you're talking about? Mm-hmm. Is this the end of a five-year titleless, trophyless era? I don't know. I think it might well be, I wouldn't say blessing in disguise, but it'll certainly open up lots of possibilities to bring in older players, perhaps less injury-prone players.
Play in the Europa League, all these new possibilities.
Well, I think Arsenal will be... I think Arsenal, along with Chelsea, have a much better chance to be title contenders next season than United or Liverpool.
I don't know. Obviously, it's not going to turn Arsenal overnight from a team who were good enough for the Champions League this year. And I know it sort of wound up looking a little bit close with fourth place in the end of the year, but actually they sort of switched off in the last few games and they let Fabianski play. So, there's reasons why it got a little bit closer than it otherwise might have. But on the flip side of that, I do think that Manchester City are going to spend big and they're going to might be muscling in. And I do think that Tottenham have a young team which has a lot of upside to it, and depending how they address their team this summer, they have the possibility to push on. So yes, I think it's going to be a very competitive top five next season.
Crikey. Well, of course, by the time you hear this, the move may have gone through or may not be happening at all this summer. Who knows? Let's now hear from Sid Lowe, who perhaps does know, in Spain.
Hello.
Sid Lowe!
How are you?
Excellent. This is good news for all those listeners who only listen to the Sid Lowe bit, because they can just hear this bit and then switch off. Now, Sid...
There aren't any of them, are there?
Oh, there are. There are. Listen, we've just talked about what this could mean for Arsenal. The Fabregas move to Barcelona, first of all, is it going to happen?
Well, I must confess, I don't know for certain about that. It's very disconcerting in a way, being in this kind of situation, because essentially the situation, as I understand it, of course, comes from Barcelona's perspective. And Barcelona privately are reasonably bullish about this. Privately, they believe it will happen. And they have a deal in place with Cesc Fabregas for when they can get a deal struck with Arsenal. Now, they admit that it might be difficult to get Arsenal to come to the table and to agree the kind of deal that they want. They admit that Arsenal are going to put up a fight, but they're privately bullish about it. The trouble is, of course, that that's only one half of the argument. And also, the other problem, in a way, is that none of this ever happens in a vacuum. So you've not just got the question mark over the debate between Arsenal and Barcelona, but also what everyone else is saying about it and how that may well affect opinions. And I don't doubt that there'll be people at Arsenal thinking, oh, they're bullish, are they? We'll show them. And in a way, almost the very fact that it gets written about kind of changes the environment, sometimes changes the attitude of people involved. Now, as I say, Barcelona believe that they're in a good position. They believe that their hand is strong and they believe that they can get this deal done. They also hope and believe that they can get it done very, very quickly. And the certainly the intention of Barcelona and Fabregas is to get everything knocked on the head before Fabregas joins the Spain squad on Monday. Now, what I don't know, or at least don't know well enough, is exactly what Arsenal's position in this. And this, of course, that's from a Guardian point of view, of course, that's something you would need to speak to the Guardian's Arsenal people about, so Dominic Fifield and so on. But certainly Barcelona are confident.
Excellent. Happy Goth says, didn't Barcelona get 99 points in La Liga this year? Aren't they just being selfish now?
Well, there's a number of reasons why they want Cesc Fabregas. And one is that while they got 99 points in La Liga this year, let's not forget that they also got knocked out of the Champions League and they also didn't win the Copa del Rey. So I suppose in that sense, yes, they're being very, very greedy because they want to win everything. I think they recognised this season that their squad was short and that they almost paid for that, although in the end that they didn't, because they were able to respond to the really fantastic challenge that Real Madrid put up to them in the league, at least. So they believe they need strengthening in the squad. I think they look at Cesc Fabregas and they see him as almost, if you like, a kind of a spiritual Barcelona player. And I know that sounds ridiculously poncy, but that's the way they look at it. A kid that was brought up through the youth system at Barcelona, who is a Catalan and therefore can fit into the model of the club in terms of what the club represents, and the model of the club in terms of what the club represents in playing style as well. They think that's very, very important. Never underestimate the significance of Catalan players for Barcelona, and particularly for this Barcelona present, Joan Laporta, the outgoing present, and he wants to leave a legacy. Then there's another factor in all this, which is that Xavi's now 30 and they are looking for a long-term future as well as a short-term gain in this.
Right, so even though he doesn't get into the Spanish side automatically ahead of Xavi and Iniesta, you think Xavi's advancing years mean that he will get more of a look in at Barcelona?
Well, I think there's a number of ways of handling the situation. First of all, and the most obvious one, is that this year Barcelona's players by the end were very much running on empty, and I think Pep Guardiola would like to be able to rotate rather more than he's done this year. So I think there will be opportunities for Xavi, Iniesta and Cesc Fabregas, who are the three players who are most similar to each other. The second factor is that there's always the tactical variation of having Andrés Iniesta as part of the front three, which he's done on numerous occasions. And then there's another very important factor in all of this as well, which is that Barcelona this year really haven't scored goals from midfield. And I think they recognise that they need someone who can score goals from midfield, like Cesc Fabregas can do. And in particular, although they haven't publicly talked about this, I think they're aware of the fact that they could really do with someone who can shoot from mid and long distance, as Cesc Fabregas can do. Because when a team like Inter, for example, sit back and park the bus and play very, very deep, one of the only ways of getting that team out is to have someone who can shoot from distance and force them out to block that shot, and to give you another variety to your attack. So I think they do see Cesc Fabregas as someone who can give them an awful lot. The other thing is, in response to your specific question about Spain, yes, it's true that Cesc Fabregas doesn't naturally get into the Spanish side, but Spain also have David Silva and Xavi Alonso, who are players, of course, that Barcelona don't have.
99 points last year, and people are saying they're even better than the Cruyff dream team, etc. With Villa coming in instead of, I don't know, Ibrahimovic up front and possibly Fabregas too, how do you rate this Barcelona squad potentially?
Well, let's see.
Best
how well
ever,
Villa fits
ever in the
I
history
think
of football, Sid?
Oof, well, it's very difficult. I mean, I do think that when you look at this side, I think it's more than just looking at it as a squad in terms of list of players, but the if you like, the coherence of this squad, the fact that with the exception of Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and we've talked about this lots and lots of times, whose very role almost was to deliberately break their pattern of play. They're a squad where they're not just very good players, but they all fit the identity perfectly, or nearly all of them do. I think it might well be one of the great squads of all time, but then bear in mind that when we start talking about squads, squads are a relatively new phenomenon. You look back at, say, I don't know, for argument's sake, that great Liverpool side in the late 80s with Barnes and Beardsley and Houghton. That was a hell of a team, but not much of a squad, because at that stage there wasn't much of a squad. The Johan Cruyff dream team didn't have anything like the squad that this Barcelona team have got. It's tempting to say they're one of the greatest ever, but let's see how it works with David Villa. And I must also admit that I think they're a year too late on Villa. I think they should have got him last year, which is what they tried to do, and not Zlatan Ibrahimovic in the first place.
Where the money's coming from is one question. And, of course, this is all against a backdrop of enormous debt. Reports this morning suggesting that Liga is even more indebted than the Premier League, $3.5 billion or something. And with, also, the team that up until last week was jostling for a place in the Champions League, Mallorca, now going into voluntary administration. So your warnings about, you know, the dark days ahead for the Liga apparently now beginning to materialise. Is there a penalty, by the way, one of our readers was asking, for going into administration, a points penalty?
Absolutely key question, and that is the point, and this is one of the things that some directors in Spain are furious about. No, there isn't. No penalty whatsoever. So you can go into administration, basically, obviously, screw over the people that you owe money to. Bear in mind that Aduriz, Mallorca's top scorer this season, was signed by Athletic Bilbao, but nobody paid Athletic Bilbao anything, so he's been playing for free, effectively, all year in terms of the transfer fee anyway. And that is the problem, that you've got a lot of directors in Spain who privately will say, well, what's the point in us doing things the right way? What's the point in us looking after our finances and being sensible when you've got other clubs who can waste money on players that they haven't really got, and then at the end of it go, hey, sod it, we'll go into what's known in Spain as a proceso concursal administration, and we'll sort it all out, and then we'll come back as strong as ever. Now, what Mallorca's risk, of course, is that there's no penalty in Spain. There is a European penalty, and Mallorca is still negotiating with UEFA about whether or not they get the licence to play European football next year.
Football on the pitch. Spanish Cup.
Yeah, brilliant. Really good fun. A really great game. Really kind of angry and aggressive and flying from one end to the other. Great atmosphere as well in the Camp Nou. Atletico Madrid against Sevilla. And Sevilla won it with goals from their two wingers, Diego Capel and Jesus Navas. It's a pity for Atletico Madrid, but I think in a way justice was done. And when you look at the runs in the Copa del Rey, at least Sevilla, although they were beaten three times in the Copa del Rey this year, but still kept on getting through, at least Sevilla beat some quite good teams as opposed to Atletico Madrid, who the best side they beat was Racing Santander, who survived in the first division on the final day.
Sid, I noticed you've taken to tweeting like a budgie on amphetamines during football matches. Do you find it impairs your enjoyment or enhances it?
No, I find it. I'm starting to find it a pain in the ass and trying to cut down, to be honest with you.
How many followers do you have on Twitter?
I don't honestly know.
How many do you have, Barry?
But I don't know.
I'll around the region of 5,237.
Wow. You are, or I am.
I have.
He comes from a big family.
I've actually got my computer open at the moment, so I can check. Hang on.
Oh, do.
Raphael, are you on Twitter?
I'm sure this is pod gold, isn't it? Waiting for me to check my Twitter feed. 4,895, according to this.
In your face, Lowe.
Right. How many Raphael Honigstein?
I'll have you. You're going down.
Can you check Raphael Honigstein? Can you see
I've only got about 1,200, I think.
It's quality, not quantity, I think.
It's true.
Yeah. Paolo?
Maybe me and Barry could link to you.
I'm closer to Raphael than I am to Sid or Barry.
Right. Sorry, Sid, what were you saying there?
I was being patronising. I was saying perhaps me and Barry could link to Rafa, and then people would follow him through us, you see.
That's a lovely idea.
I think an awful lot of my followers, and I'm making myself sound like Jesus here, a lot of them are those sort of bot prostitute kind of things that I seek out on the web. No, you know, they follow you and you're it's kind of like a spam thing.
All right. Can I just apologise, by the way, to anyone who follows me? I have about as many followers as I have tweets, which is, I think, still in double figures. So I do apologise, but the whole thing I find a little bit self-indulgent on my part, although other people who have lots of interesting things to say, I say good luck to them. And I do enjoy reading some people's tweets. Anyway, Sid, listen, thanks for taking us through with such aplomb the murky waters of all of these many deals and financial implications, etc. And lovely to speak to you. We'll perhaps speak to you for a Football Weekly season finale on Monday, hey?
Yep, that'd be fantastic.
Super. Thanks, Sid.
My pleasure. Cheers.
I say season ending, but of course there's the World Cup, this just in, coming up in, when is it, June? June the 11th?
June the 11th or 12th, yes.
Something like that. Barry, I know you're excited because we're doing a daily podcast.
When are we going to South Africa? No one's told me yet.
Sorry, you just keep those bags packed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a nightly roundup on all of the exciting developments in the World Cup there. And, all through the World Cup, except perhaps for rest days or not, depending on how things go. Anyway, that's something exciting to look forward to. That's all to come. Right now, though, time for a little bit of music.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
Now, Champions League final. This Saturday evening at the Bernabeu, Inter Milan, Bayern Munich, tumpty-tumpty-tum, Arwen Robben versus Wesley Sneijder, the translator against his old boss, etc. So much to discuss. I've got Paolo Bandini here and Raphael Honigstein. Away you go, boys.
Yeah, I mean, the only problem, of course, with a game like this, it's been so heavily covered, you're sort of not sure what the angle is that people haven't heard already. I mean, obviously, as you've mentioned, yes, you've got the obvious set-to between a manager who used to be the translator for the other manager. You've got two teams, both of whom reached the final through perhaps a fortuitous offside goal along the way.
Mm.
You've got, you know, I think it was Arjen Robben I heard on the radio this morning coming out and trying to stoke the fire a little bit by saying, oh, Inter play boring football, but we play exciting football at Bayern. Which, it was an interesting attack, actually, because I always thought to myself, I think Raphael wrote this in his column a few weeks ago, that Jose Mourinho almost needs a little bit of antagonism to get things going before a game. And, you know, up to this point, he really hadn't had that much excuse to get going, so maybe that'll give him something to get his teeth into. But he's sort of more busy at the moment telling everyone that he may go to Real Madrid, and he certainly wants to coach there at some point, but maybe not next year, because he couldn't possibly tell anyone until after the cup's over.
He's saying in today's Gazette, I want Real 100%. I was just going to say, you know, when you look...
Although he does qualify that again, as always, by saying, but maybe not next year.
Right.
Of course,
Inter, meantime, seems to have made their plans with Mihalovic, who's done so well at Catania and is of course, a favourite of many of the people at Inter. I was just going to say, when you look through the team, I mean, I know Raphael will disagree with this, but I think Inter are the stronger lineup, and I think they also have a more impressive road to the final when you look at the teams they've beaten along the way. Chelsea, Barcelona, of course, whereas Bayern had a slightly easier route. However, I'm wondering how much the way that the entire build-up week has been hijacked by the business of Mourinho and his on-off, or will-he-won't-he move to Real Madrid, how much that's going to affect Inter?
There's two things on that. I mean, first point, which is sort of addressing the route to the final, I think definitely the perception in Italy is that Inter should win this final, and that is because they've, you know, in Italy, the perception of Bayern is still overridingly from the group stages when they're in the same group as Juventus, when they were probably at the lowest ebb of the whole season, I would have said. And then from that Fiorentina game, which, you know, everyone in Italy still thinks Fiorentina should have got through. And so I think that sort of skews possibly slightly the way Bayern are viewed at the moment in Italy. And I think the second point about Mourinho and talking about Madrid and the distraction of it is, yes, on the face of it, it seems like a strange thing to do. But bear in mind that during the Chelsea game, he allowed people to talk about, oh, you know, he wants to go back to England and he's not happy in Italy. He loves to do this. He loves to just distract everyone from his team, make it all about him, and that works twofold. First of all, it maybe takes the pressure off his team, and secondly, it gives him more publicity, which is what the man always wants.
It's certainly working anyway, because we're talking about him and not the match.
Dope Addict says, Mourinho off to Madrid, from the richest club in England to the richest club in Italy to the richest club in Spain. He really knows how to challenge himself. Mm.
Well, Paul Merson said a few years ago when Mourinho was at Chelsea that, and he's a very keen student of the game and a wise philosopher on Sky Sports Saturday, but Merce made quite an interesting point. He said, you know, everyone goes on about how great Mourinho is, but, you know, put him in charge of Colchester with no budget and see how he gets on then.
Yeah.
And it's never going to happen, but I would like to see how he would get on. I mean, he is a brilliant manager, and his tactical outwitting of Pep Guardiola in the semi-final with 10 men is probably the managerial performance of the season and the team performance of the season. But even if they'd lost that game, I still think it would have been one of the performances of the season.
I think the way they pitched up at Chelsea, game was even more, just because no one was expecting it for him to line up with Sneijder, Pandev, Eto and Milito all at the same time in that game.
Which is how he's going to line up, says the Gazetta, against Bayern Munich. Raphael, quaking, looking scared?
Me? No.
Yes. No. You're very confident, aren't you, Raphael?
I'm fairly confident. I think the market, the international betting market, which is always a good one to look at because it's not skewed by specific patriotic ideas or or overreactions to certain managers or certain players, they make Inter a favourite by 0.25. So just the smallest possible margin in the Asian handicap, which shows you that there's almost nothing as far as the market is concerned between those two clubs. And I think it's right. I think Inter, for me, would be slight favourites, but very, very slight favourites. Mm-hmm. And if you look back towards the last few Champions League finals, I don't think the favourites have won. Certainly for me, they haven't. I mean, I really thought United are going to be much stronger than Barcelona, of course. I famously predicted a 3-0 win. I thought Chelsea were the better side against Manchester United. Okay, Milan, Liverpool, you could argue each way, I guess. Before that, Barcelona, Arsenal, okay. But, you know, the margins are so small that I think Bayern have got a very good reason to feel confident and to feel as if this is a team that can beat, because they really specifically wanted Inter rather than Barcelona, because they think their playing style, which is not based on possession, which is more based on counter-attacking and aggression, Inter's style that is, will suit Bayern much better. Because one thing Bayern can't do is defend, and one thing Bayern do very well is keep the ball. So they think Inter is a perfect match for them.
I think you could look at what Sib was saying earlier about, you know, not being able to create chances from outside the area. I think Bayern have certainly showed they can do that in the Champions League this season. I mean, I think the obvious matchup that I think everyone's going to highlight in the next couple of days is going to be Arjen Robben, and it looks like he's going to be playing up against Christian Kivu, because Inter have got Motta suspended, so I think they're going to put Zanetti in the middle of the park. And Kivu, you know, he's a good player. His season's been a bit disrupted because he fractured his skull in the middle of the season, and you know, he hasn't played maybe as many games as you'd like, and maybe that's a good thing because he's fresh. Maybe it's a difficult thing, but yeah, I think that's
worth pointing out that the way that Inter have surprised everyone is the fact that they've got Mourinho. You talk about him being a brilliant manager, and I think one of the bits of evidence that people cite for this is the fact that he's got Samuel Eto'o, who wasn't known for his commitment to the team cause at Barcelona, playing at times as a virtual fullback, and it will be Kivu and Eto'o, I think, probably up against Robben. Raphael,
are you saying that, suggesting that Inter are going to go out and attack Bayern?
No.
I think it's very possible that they will go out and attack Bayern, knowing that this is Bayern's weakness. The same way that Inter, in a way, even though they were 1-0 down, did it against Barcelona at home, where they really had a go, and they basically won that game in the first 90 minutes in the San Siro. We're talking about the fantastic Catenaccio performance, but the game was won in the first game. And similarly, I think, you know, the all the praise that Mourinho got for the tactical performance at Stamford Bridge, again, slightly oversees the fact that they really, for my money, were outplayed at home by Chelsea. Chelsea were very unlucky with the penalty that wasn't given. I think Chelsea were the better side by far in the first leg, and should have probably gone through as well.
Bayern coming off a huge win in the German Cup, so they're on for a triple, as are Inter. And of course, Samuel Eto'o, as we mentioned on Monday, that would be his second straight triple.
Am I right in thinking Bayern have won the treble before, or am I making that up?
No, they've never won a trophy.
Has their German side ever done it? Because it's never been done in Italy before.
No, not even the 70s side with Beckenbauer, Müller and all these guys never won the treble.
Wow. If Inter don't win, basically, in Italy next year will only have three teams competing for a place in the Champions League for the season after. Michael Ballack.
Yeah.
Out of the World Cup. Now, we didn't mention this on Monday. I'm very sorry about this, everybody. The announcement came after we'd gone into record, so we didn't know, etc. Miranda C says, no one seems bothered by his injury. Is this because he's German? Gut Besserung Ballack. Stilton says, despite his passing being more sideways than way, etc. Ballack has scored 44 goals in 98 games for Germany. That's all right, isn't it? But Wonk says, given Ballack's record in major finals, surely Germany are now nailed on for the World Cup. Does he have is he a bit of a walking jinx?
If taking your team to the final, then not playing in the final, and then being responsible for somehow losing the final can be construed as jinxing the team, yes. Right. Of course, there would have never been anywhere near any finals without him over the last 10 years, because his curse and blessing in many ways has been to be the one outstanding footballer in a generation without outstanding German footballers.
What's the reaction been to his absence?
It's huge. There was special bulletins went up after the May news on state television, 15 minutes on Ballack out of the World Cup, shock. And people are fairly devastated. because there is no ready-made replacement. I think it's fair to say his dominance, his importance is not quite as big as it was a few years ago, because you've got the likes of Schweinsteiger coming through and very young attacking midfield players like Özil, Kroos, Marin. But there is absolutely no one with his experience. There's no one even of his age. Miroslav Klose at 32 is the next one in line. Then you've got Schweinsteiger at 25. So there's a total gap of experienced players in the squad. And with the tough physical group that they have, Serbia, Ghana, Australia, I think there is a fear that Germany might be bullied for the first time. They might have a team that's very technical, but not very physical. And that's something that really worries people.
Mm. All right, then. Well,
sorry. Balak's agent has said that they may sue Kevin Prince-Boateng, which is quite funny, because, I mean, Balak's no stranger to dirty tackles himself. There's plenty of evidence on YouTube that he's well able to dish it out, but apparently can't take it. And Boateng, during the week, he apologised repeatedly and then seemed to get fed up apologising and went, well, look, hold on a minute.
He slapped me
first, and that was worse than the tackle. Now, the slap wasn't worse than the tackle, because it was just a little gentle-ish cuff across the face as opposed to a World Cup ruining tackle. But I very much doubt there'll be any legal action.
Mm. Posts to come and a bit of an Argentina update and, of course, that big Premier League playoff or championship playoff final thing. Yeah. Posts, everybody. Many thanks to Smith17 for your puntastic Champions League preview. We're a little bit pressed for time, but I'm sure everyone who read that enjoyed that. James Heal, Del Neri joining Juventus. Do you think it's a wise move? Slightly. Prandelli, of course, joining the Italian national team. Saw somebody posting in saying we didn't get the Laurent Blanc France story. It's only just been confirmed, or maybe not even yet.
This morning.
Confirmed this morning. Okay, yeah, there you go.
I'm not sure Prandelli is sort of, that's not like an official announcement.
No, it's not official.
That's reports,
it's just people like us know that kind of thing. Yeah. Okay. Gandhi.
Will you get a bigger jacket?
Yeah. Gandhi and Blank Guardian talking about an all-star team of players. Somebody mentioned the idea of North Korea not going to the World Cup. I don't know if there's been any particular stories about that, but somebody's saying if they didn't go, they should make an all-star team of players, barbarian style, who are never going to make it to the World Cup because their team aren't good enough. And it's a fantastic idea. Fantastic. Count Takeshi echoes the idea of Football Weekly's Little World Cup brother and has a similar suggestion, a network of fans, largely of non-Premier League clubs, who could comment when their clubs are in the news. He gives the example, he understands that no one on the pod cares as much about Bristol City as he does, but it'd just be nice if somebody did know about it, could talk when they are in the news. Gandhi, indeed, you again, posts him with some Ross County Dundee United business, which is an ample illustration of that. As is City Guy's fantastic post, Fenerbahçe's title race with Bursaspor. And what extraordinary story it is. Can you give it to us in Precy style?
Well, as I understand it, essentially what happened was Fenerbahçe drew their last game of the season, and that meant that if Bursaspor...
Well, this was all going... The two games were going on at the same time, contemporaneously, is that right? Simultaneously. There we go. And Fenerbahçe had understood, some reports say it's from the stadium announcer, that Bursaspor were not winning. Mm. Therefore, a draw was enough for them. So, the last 5 minutes or so, they just kicked the ball around and just generally wasted time. When the final whistle blew, all their fans ran onto the pitch and celebrated with them as ticker tape and tinsel flew out across the stadium. Until the announcer said, oh, hang on a minute, Bursaspor have won their game. You guys needed a win. And then the rioting started. And the tears. Amazing scenes. Apparently it's not the first time this has happened in Turkey, but extraordinary stuff.
Yeah, stadium on fire and the like. Of course, happens in Italy all the time.
It does indeed. Congratulations to Bursaspor, of whom we know absolutely nothing, but will be forced to find something out.
They're Anatolian, and they're the first team from outside Istanbul ever to win the Turkish League.
Indeed so. Only the second... they're the second club from outside Istanbul to win the Turkish League. Trabzonspor won it in 1976.
Damn.
But they are the first team outside the Turkish big... I think it's five or something. They're only the second club ever. They're only the fifth Turkish side ever to win the title. There you go. Well done to them. We're going to have to find out more about them because they're going to be in the Champions League. Straight into the Champions League they go. Well done to them. I Want Curly Hair 2 says, are there any World Cup drinking games we can play when we have them? Something involving Clive Tilsley, he says. Every time he mentions that night in Barcelona or talks about Rooney while commentating on a game not involving England. What about a drink every time Marcel Desailly says something you can't understand? Jackson Fife says a shot of tequila every time Gerrard gets the ball within 30 metres of goal and the commentator screams his name when he lets rip. That's one for the hardcore, says Jackson Fife. Thank you,
Is this
Andrew.
Not very irresponsible?
You're right,
we shouldn't
Barry,
be promoting binge drinking among our listenership.
No, indeed not. No. Yeah.
Everyone could say a little prayer instead of having a shot.
That's a very nice idea.
Or donate, I don't know, 50p to 50p charity.
50p for every Clive Tildesley. Yeah. Well, that's how long it took us for all the video evidence to prove that goal was in or out. And another 50 when he then says, oh. Yeah. Okay. Shall we
could have a World Cup
pot.
Football Weekly drinking game where every time Sean Ingle mentions bookmakers or betting odds, you have to.
All right.
Laurie, shotgun.
Can you draw up bingo cards for that? We need some Sid Lowisms as well, and then some.
Of course, Sean
Ingle's
going
raffers,
to be out in South Africa getting bitten by dogs and stuff. We won't.
No. We'll be safe here in near-Earth orbit. Argentina, much in the news, of course, with Diego Maradona announcing his preliminary squad. And I think he's now released a slimline, ironically, version of same. In the run-up to which, or around the news conference for that on Wednesday, he got surrounded by newsmen, managed to hit one who fell to the ground. And according to witnesses, Maradona then drove his car over the lower part of the journalist's leg, wound down his window and said, "What an asshole you are. How can you put your leg there where it can get run over, man?" Fantastic stuff. Cameraman was taken away for further treatment. Joel Richards now joins us on the line. Joel.
Hello there. How are you?
I'm very well, Joel. Thank you very much for joining us. First of all, there's been so much talk about Argentina's squad and the omissions and all that. What was the reaction like in Argentina? Was there much wringing of hands on that?
Well, I think the main thing about the 23-man squad that Maradona named is that there were no real surprises because the hard work, the dirty work, if you want, was already done. He when he left out players like Zanetti and Cambiasso, Lucho González, Lisandro López, these were all players who were already left out of the 30-man squad. So when it came to naming the 23, there weren't that many surprises, to be honest. No surprise that Colaccini was left out. Lavezzi was left out, which surprised some because he's a player that Maradona really likes, quite versatile. But no, I think, like as I said, the main point was that big-name players like Zanetti and Cambiasso were already left out of the squad.
Right, OK. The business of Zanetti and Cambiasso, I mean, there is a school of thought, and Couscous Now posted a very good blog on why it was a good decision to perhaps leave Zanetti out. Over here, it's been greeted with derision and horror, the idea of those two not going to South Africa. But in Argentina, do they see Maradona's point? Do they feel that Zanetti didn't perform for the national team?
That's very much the case, yeah, because, I mean, as soon as Maradona took over, he dropped Zanetti as captain. He named Javier Mascherano as his captain, and Maradona wanted a change of certain players. He then realised that he didn't have many fullbacks at all, so he called up Zanetti. But I think what really shows how Zanetti's performances were seen was that the Sports Daily Olé rated him as the second worst performer for Argentina when they were at their real low point, when they lost to Brazil, and then when they lost to Paraguay. Zanetti was sort of singled out alongside Gabriel Heinze as two of the real poor performers. So although Zanetti's obviously had a wonderful season, double winner with Inter, perhaps win the treble this weekend, his performances with Argentina haven't been what people expect of him. So I think that in some way sort of goes to justifying Maradona's decision to leave him out.
So are there major concerns in Argentina with Maradona's squad? Perhaps the fact that he decided he doesn't need any fullbacks for a major football tournament?
Yeah, absolutely, and it's bizarre because Maradona is so proud and so confident and very charming when he describes how he's going to play, and he has no problem whatsoever saying that his defenders are there to defend and they're not going to do anything else whatsoever. He said in a recent interview that he said, "Why do I need my fullbacks to get past the halfway line? That's what my wingers are for." Which, you know, if you look at, say, Brazil, obviously it's completely opposite philosophy. So I think one of the headlines today was a limited and unbalanced squad. So they're worried that if the game plan doesn't go according to what Maradona thinks will happen, and if the four sort of central defenders playing across the back line doesn't work out, they've got no plan B. So people are already sort of very worried about how Argentina will perform, because obviously they're basically looking for a moment of brilliance from Leo Messi to do anything at South Africa.
And Martin Palermo. Don't forget Martin Palermo.
Well, he's going because it's an incredible campaign that's started up around Palermo, basically because he's the all-time top scorer for Boca Juniors, which, as you know, is the most supported team in Argentina. And also because Palermo then scored the goal against Peru in the pouring rain, and that basically made sure that Argentina could still qualify for the World Cup. It was in time added on. It was kind of a very sort of heroic, you know, situation that Palermo did that in. But obviously, anyone who's seen Palermo playing will know just that he's just a completely other end of the spectrum to the kind of players they're taking, such as, you know, Messi, Aguero, Tevez, or Diego Milito.
Right.
He's a good goal scorer, but he's 36 years of age, tremendously immobile, has no pace whatsoever, and he's kind of going as a lucky charm, if you want. That's kind of, I think, what people are seeing that Palermo's role will be, that they'll chuck him on if things aren't going right, and bombard the area with crosses. But it's an eccentric decision, to say the least.
All right, they'll bring him on in case of penalties, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, obviously, I think Palermo's probably best known, certainly in Europe, for that hat-trick of missed penalties against Colombia in the 94 Copa America.
Excellent. Joel, thank you so much for that. And yes, we look forward to catching up with you during the World Cup itself.
Okay, hope so. Cheers.
Brilliant. Thanks, Joel.
Just while Joel was talking there, I couldn't help about Maradona saying he didn't need fullbacks. Can you imagine if our resident giant brain in a simmering tank was sitting down for a chat with Maradona? You'd just get a fit of the vapours and swoon. You'd need to be brought round with, you know, those electric shock paddles they use in medical dramas, yeah. or indeed hospitals.
Yes. Oh, dear. Now, meantime, back in England, the playoffs are continuing. The League One playoff final will be between Millwall and Swindon. And
Poor old producer Pete.
Yeah.
Look at him there, wiping salty tears off his cheek.
While in League Two, it's Rotherham up against almost certainly Dagenham and Redbridge, who you'll recall were 6-0 up over Morecambe from their first leg. Rotherham, so poor, they don't have a stadium or a training ground. So a bit of a fairy tale ending there, perhaps, for Rotherham. And the Championship playoff final, of course, Blackpool-Cardiff. 90 million is now the figure that people are banding around as to the value of winning this little one, which will be happening on Saturday afternoon at Wembley. Who would the neutral rather see with that?
Blackpool.
Really?
I would have thought so. I mean, yeah. First of all, because Ian Holloway provides great interviews. And secondly, I don't know. I think there's a level of expectation around Cardiff. For the last few years, they've sort of been knocking on the door and getting close. And actually, it was interesting in the game between the two of them in January. They drew both their games in the league this season, 1-1, I think. But the game in January, which is at Cardiff, when they were drawing, the Cardiff fans were sort of booing and jeering their own players. And they were really getting on their backs, even though they were sort of fourth at the time and doing quite well. So I think, you know, Blackpool is definitely the fairy tale, if you want to call one of them a fairy tale. They're definitely the team who sort of... we're not expected to get there, who are going to, you know, who draw in crowds of sort of 8,000 and have now got sort of 30,000 to sell at Wembley. And yeah, Ian Holloway's great value for a quote.
Right.
Plus, it'll be a handy 6 points for those of us who support teams who may be in the relegation battle next season. It means there's only two relegation places left to
you
fight
think
over.
That Blackpool are a less fearsome adversary potentially than Cardiff?
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, it would be astonishing if they got up and stayed up. Stranger things have happened. But
Hull did it.
Yeah, but I mean, Hull are a bigger club than Blackpool. Blackpool's average attendance is something like 8,000. So,
I think the other slightly troubling thing with Cardiff is just that they're apparently spending right at the edge of their means, and if they don't get up, it may be problematic. And, you know, so on one level you think, well, if they get up at least it won't be a problem, but on the other level you think, is that responsible? Whereas Blackpool... I may be proved wrong on this, but I believe that Blackpool have done things much more within a modest spending structure.
Mm. The thing about it is, though, whoever wins, both managers are really decent, nice guys, and David Jones has Premier League experience because he used to manage Southampton. But who, if Blackpool get up, it's Blackpool in the Premier League. If Cardiff get up, it's a Welsh team in the Premier League. So it will be interesting, whoever wins.
It's a win-win situation for neutral fans in many ways.
Yeah, unless they get attacked by Cardiff fans on away trips next season.
Tell you what, may the best team win, especially on that pitch. And with that, I think we come to the end of today's Football Weekly Extra, the last Football Weekly Extra of this season. We're back on Monday with Football Weekly. Barry, are you around on Monday? Don't know.
I think I am, yeah.
All right, maybe we'll see you then. Yeah. Paolo Bandini, Nice of you to turn up today.
Cheers.
Thank you very much. Raphael, enjoy your trip to the Bernabeu. And perhaps we'll get your reaction on Monday, if we may.
Sure.
Producer Pete, thanks as ever for holding the whole sorry ship together. That was a P. And we'll be back on Monday. Have a super weekend. Bye-bye for now.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.